The average American makes almost 5 pounds of trash per person every day, and that's not even counting recycling. That's a quarter of a billion pounds of garbage a year that is going straight into our landfills. All of that garbage causes a lot of problems for our environment and for the health of each one of us. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It may seem like too big a problem to tackle, but our guest today has great advice and tips for drastically reducing the trash that you create. Lauren Singer majored in environmental studies at New York University and later decided to live a zero-waste lifestyle. She blogs about her experience at trashisfortossers.com. Lauren, it's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, I have to say, a lot of interest in this topic, just coworkers stopping me in the hallway and saying, oh, I can't wait to hear this. It's really exciting. So just the fact of scheduling you is inspiring people, but I want to make sure that we give people some really hands-on tips to take away with them today, too. And you had a couple epiphanies that led you to try and live a zero-waste lifestyle, and I really admire that you, you're pretty honest about saying, you know, here I was an environmental studies major, and I hadn't necessarily connected all the dots.
Exactly. Yes. Everything kind of started when I was an environmental studies major at NYU, like you said, and my senior year, there was a girl in one of my classes, and every day she would bring a plastic bag with a plastic clamshell full of food and a plastic water bottle and a plastic fork and knife and a plastic bag of chips. And after every class, I would just watch her throw it all out. And this would happen class after class, and I grew really frustrated about it. And then one day after class, I went home to make dinner, and I opened my fridge, and I had this realization that every single thing that was in my refrigerator was packaged in plastic. And I felt like a total hypocrite because there was this girl that was, you know, frustrating me, and there I was being just as wasteful. And so I decided to quit plastic in that moment. And that meant not just, you know, forgoing plastic altogether. It meant finding alternatives to things that were conventionally packaged in plastic. So like toothpaste and deodorant. And while I was looking for alternatives to those products, I learned that I had to make them myself. And so I did some research online and came across this blog called The Zero Waste Home, started by Bea Johnson. She has a family of four, and they live a totally zero waste life in California. And when I learned about that, I became super empowered, and I decided to go for a zero waste lifestyle. And 2 years later, all of the trash that I produce can fit inside of a 16-ounce mason jar.
Wow. And actually, one of our listeners commented on Facebook. Tim suggested that you make an art project out of your jar of trash because then you're even reusing that.
Exactly. Yep. Hang it right on my wall.
Well, on your blog, trashisfortossers.com, you talk about two key steps to getting to zero waste. And the first is to evaluate. Why is that step so important?
I think it's really important to look at your trash and see what you produce, because you can't reduce your trash until you know what it is. I think people, when they actually start looking at their trash, are really shocked at how much and what they're actually throwing away. And a lot of the times people realize that those materials, a lot of them are actually recoverable. So people are throwing away things that are completely recyclable. So I like to suggest actually looking at your trash as a first step, because then you can identify how to eliminate it. So when I did that, I realized that I had a lot of food packaging waste, a lot of product packaging waste, and a lot of organic food waste. And so by learning how to buy in bulk or package-free, learning how to make my own products, and learning how to compost, I eliminated essentially all of my trash.
And I really like, too, that you actually encourage people to kind of take a step back and think about why they want, why they're interested in decreasing their impact. Because I think it's not that far off from, like, when you're starting an exercise, a new exercise routine, thinking, like, why is this important? What's going to help me stick with it?
Exactly. Yeah. For me, my overall goal in life is having a positive environmental impact. And that moment where I was standing at my refrigerator really helped me to realize that while I cared about sustainability and while it meant a lot to me and while I was studying it, I wasn't living as sustainable of a lifestyle as I could be. And so living a zero-waste lifestyle is perfect for me because it helps me align directly with my values.
Mm-hmm. And for other people, you know, it might be just to have less stuff and clutter around, or as a way to save money.
Absolutely. I've definitely become more of a minimalist, and that is a way to drastically improve your life. For me, you know, it means having fewer things to clean. My house is definitely less cluttered. And it also means, you know, living a zero-waste lifestyle, I save a ton of money. Making your own products is a lot less expensive than buying them in the stores. Buying products package-free or buying your food package-free or in bulk is also less expensive because you don't have to pay a premium for packaging. So I've also just realized that besides, you know, the environmental benefits, there are a lot of economic and personal benefits as well to living this lifestyle.
We are talking with Lauren Singer. She lives a zero-waste lifestyle, and she blogs about her experiences at trashisfortossers.com. Are you aware of how much trash you personally produce? Are you interested in cutting down on it but don't really know where to start? Or maybe you've already taken on the challenge and have some tips to share. We'd love to have you join in. You can call 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mehler Show, and Mehler is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Lauren, one of the things that you encourage people to do also is to really look at what we use on a daily basis. I think that I actually am kind of afraid to do this exercise because I'm betting that probably 80 to 90% of the things that are mine in our home, I probably use only a couple times a year.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Through transitioning to this lifestyle, I really had the opportunity to reevaluate all the things that I was using. And I did downsize a lot by doing exactly that, realizing the things that I had in my home, I wasn't even touching. So things like that, I would donate. I would sell clothes that I realized I wasn't wearing, was just holding on to an idea that maybe one day I would need it, but it turns out that I wouldn't. And so, again, I saved a lot of money by doing that. And I also decluttered my home, which felt amazing.
And I like that you tie it to how much and what do I really need to be happy? Because I think sometimes, maybe especially as Americans, we can get hung up on happiness equals stuff.
Yeah, for me, happiness equals less stuff, for sure. I mean, when I can go on vacation and bring all of the clothes that I have in my closet on vacation with me in a carry-on bag, that feels really amazing. And when I can go on that trip and not, you know, feel like, oh, my God, I have nothing to wear. When I've learned to live a lifestyle where I can feel comfortable with who I am and my personality and not have to justify it by the amount of things that I have, mm-hmm. It feels really amazing.
You also talk about really assessing. So if, assuming we've gotten rid of stuff that we use only occasionally or we really don't need, but there are some things that we do need, and you suggest looking at those items and thinking creatively about sustainable alternatives. What are some of the most kind of obvious or basic things that people can start with on that?
Something that I like to suggest starting with is transitioning out your toothbrush. So you're supposed to replace your toothbrush every 3 months. 2 to 3 months really is what dentists recommend. And those toothbrushes are typically made of plastic. And I like to suggest that people transition away from plastic toothbrushes towards compostable bamboo toothbrushes that are sustainable. They won't end up in landfill. You could literally throw it in your backyard and it would break down. I find that to be a really great first step. I also think it's great to transition, you know, do one-time transition. So instead of using a paper or plastic bag at the market, bring your own bag. Instead of using a to-go coffee cup every time you get your coffee from the coffee shop, you can bring a reusable coffee cup. You know, use a stainless steel or reusable water bottle instead of buying plastic water bottles. So little changes that have a big long-term environmental impact.
And I think maybe we might have kind of skipped ahead on this, but it's important to point out that you're not suggesting that nothing gets sent out of your house, but like you said, you're composting things, you're recycling things, you're reusing things. You know, what are the things that are truly trash?
So for me, trash is exactly that. It's things that can't be recycled or composted. So everything that's in my jar is made out of plastic, and it's plastics that don't have a secondary market for the recycled material. So it's plastics that aren't easily recyclable right now. And the reason that I hold on to them instead of sending them to landfill is because I have a hope that one day those plastics will be recoverable and I can recycle them. But, you know, to stay away from that problem, I try to avoid plastics altogether.
We are talking with Lauren Singer. She is living a zero-waste lifestyle, and she blogs about her experience at trashisfortossers.com. And you have some really great resources on Trash is for Tossers, including some recipes. And you mentioned toothpaste as one of the early items that you realized, you know, you were throwing out a lot of packaging for hygiene and beauty products. You know, I'm guessing that a lot of people listening are thinking, ugh, homemade toothpaste, that can't be very appealing. What is in your homemade toothpaste?
My toothpaste is baking soda, coconut oil, and essential oils. I use peppermint, but you could also use spearmint or cinnamon or anise. And all of those ingredients have their own unique properties that help with oral hygiene. And I've been using it for years. My teeth are in amazing condition, dentist-approved mouth. And these natural products work extremely well, if not better, than conventional cleaning products or beauty and hygiene products because they don't have toxic chemicals that are bad for your body, your home, or the environment. And so one of the reasons that I love making my own products is that I have absolute control over the ingredients that I'm putting into them, which means I know exactly what, again, is going into my home, on my body, and into the environment eventually, which is really important to me.
And so you make up your own toothpaste, and then how do you store it?
I make my toothpaste, and I keep it in a mason jar right by my sink, and I use a little spoon and just scoop some onto my toothbrush and brush as I would with any other type of toothpaste. It's a really simple process. It's a lot less expensive than buying toothpaste in the store, and it doesn't come in packaging that is impossible to recycle, as a lot of toothpaste packaging is.
Well, and it's interesting because when I was looking at your blog, I realized that you really focus a lot on hygiene beauty products because when I thought about it, they are extremely high in the ratio of the packaging to the actual product.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you buy those products, you're paying a premium for the packaging. And so when you make them yourself, you're saving a lot of money. And again, like I said before, you're having control over the ingredients that are put in them. Something that is really important to me is, you know, alongside, I started my own company, The Simply Co., and a lot of cleaning products that you can buy, you know, cleaning product manufacturers aren't legally required to disclose the ingredients of their products on their packaging. So I like to make my own cleaning products because I like to know exactly what I'm using in my home, and I don't want to, you know, have to worry about what I'm bringing into my house.
So it's interesting because you're talking about things for cleaning your home and yourself, and they're cleaner cleaning products, really.
Exactly.
We are talking with Lauren Singer. She majored in environmental studies at New York University and had an awakening and realized that she wanted to live a much more sustainable life. So she is pursuing a zero-waste lifestyle. She blogs about her experience at trashisfortossers.com. She's happy to share her advice and experiences with you. Is this something that appeals to you? Lauren is happy to help, or maybe you've already taken some steps. We'd love to hear about how you are minimizing the waste that you generate. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz is our on-air producer on the Ideas Network. Right now, we are talking about how to live a zero or closer to zero waste lifestyle with Lauren Singer. And Lauren, after evaluating our motivations and kind of the current state of our lives, the next step is transition. And transition sounds kind of gradual. Is that an important part of that?
Absolutely. Transitioning to a zero-waste lifestyle is exactly that. It's transitioning. Some people, when they hear that I live a zero-waste life, immediately think this is impossible because they have this first impression that I did this in one day or that I did it overnight, and that's not the case at all. This was a very gradual process. It was step by step. So, for instance, first I learned how to compost, and then I learned how to properly recycle, then I learned how to shop in bulk, then I learned how to shop at the farmer's market, and then the way that I transitioned out my products to homemade products was, you know, if I ran out of toothpaste, instead of buying new toothpaste, I would make it myself. Instead of buying new deodorant, I would not buy a new one, and I would learn and do research online on how to make it myself. And so I've developed this really great collection of recipes just by transitioning one thing at a time. And it made it a lot more palatable to change.
And it probably, it almost creeps up on you how much progress you've made if you're doing it kind of one at a time.
Absolutely. You know, people ask me all the time, is it hard? And I say, honestly, I don't even realize that I live this lifestyle anymore because it's just become my habit. And so once you do things gradually and they just become part of your routine, you really don't even notice that you're not producing as much waste. It just is what you do.
And I like that you talk about replacing products. You kind of talked about this as you ran out of like different beauty and health products, you know, starting to make your own. But you also talk about replacing products as things that are plastic or just not meant to last with sustainable, long-lasting alternatives. What are some of those, you know, sustainable, long-lasting, what does that mean? What does that translate into for actual materials?
I like using materials that are really durable or that come from nature. So I use a lot of bamboo, a lot of wood, cast iron, stainless steel, things that are really made to last. I use glass now to store my food instead of using plastic containers. Glass is essentially inert, which makes it very food safe for heating or just for keeping things in. And so besides just being longer lasting, these products are also recyclable and for things like wood, also compostable.
Mm-hmm. And like you were saying, like the toothbrush handles made out of, was that bamboo also?
Yes,
yeah, so totally compostable. Let's go to the phones. We have some callers that would like to join in, and you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Up first is Rick from La Crosse. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Most of this plastic started after World War II, around 1945, 1950, and it's created this great big garbage patch in the ocean that's about as big as Texas, I guess. And, you know, what your guest is talking about is, I think, really important for the, you know, for the future of the planet, really. So,
thanks for that, Rick. And I wonder if that increase in plastics was partly putting people to work that were coming back from the war.
Yeah, and I think it was also a factor of convenience, you know. But for me, it's more convenient to have durable, long-lasting products than waste money on buying new disposable things all the time.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things, like you were mentioning, cast iron pans, I mean, certainly that's something that you often see, like in thrift stores or even antique shops, things like that. One of the things you like to do is buy things secondhand, not just because you're saving that thing from the landfill, but there's none of that packaging that comes on it when you buy it the first time.
Exactly. So a lot of the alternatives that I use, you could definitely buy in secondhand stores. And again, you'll save money. So cast iron pans are amazing. And when you buy them secondhand, they're essentially just pre-seasoned for you. So it's a great deal if you can get one secondhand. I also buy all of my clothing secondhand.
And another way to save money, too.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was reading one of your blog posts and you talked about that, first of all, you only had or have two pairs of jeans. One is definitely the really ratty, comfortable jeans, but your other jeans that you wear all the time got a huge rip in a rather sensitive place.
Yes.
And well, first of all, you were kind of left without a good pair of pants to wear, but you decided to try to get it patched instead of buying new ones.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, novel idea, being sarcastic, but before I lived this lifestyle, I honestly probably just would have thrown them out and bought a new pair of jeans. And instead of doing that, you know, because of, I guess, the society that I've grown up in, we're so used to just throwing things away and buying new, I tried to think of a way to repair them. And obviously, patching makes sense. And for some people, it might have been really obvious to do that, but for me, it wasn't. And I realized that I didn't even have to spend that much money to go and get my favorite jeans repaired. And then I was able to wear them again and then didn't have to go through that really annoying process of trying on a million pairs of jeans and, you know, feeling frustrated. And so it was a total win-win. You know, I saved money. It was less of a burden for the environment, and I had my favorite jeans.
There you go. And you put a little money into the local economy by having someone patch it for you.
Exactly.
Heather in Kiel is up next. Hi, Heather.
Hi. Lauren, I have to say I'm completely inspired by everything that you're doing. And as a mom of, you know, three kids and, you know, I got a husband, you know, we have a family of five, I feel like our ratio of recycling versus our garbage every week is pretty good, you know, and I'm looking at ways of how can I make that even better. You know, we're all constantly putting out recycling, and that's fantastic. So is that, you know, like if I'm buying coconut oil at the store, you know, if I buy it in a glass container versus a plastic, am I making a better choice, even though both items are recyclable? You know, or where are you getting your ingredients when you're making your own products to help reduce the waste that you're creating?
Those are great questions, Heather. Lauren?
Those are really great questions. So when I make my own products, I try to buy as much as I can package-free. And since you do have a large family, I would suggest trying to look into buying, you know, even larger bulk quantities, maybe even online. So if you know, for instance, you're going to use a lot of coconut oil, you might actually benefit and save money by ordering a large quantity of it from the internet as opposed to buying, you know, little 16-ounce jars at the supermarket. But it really boils down to kind of what your priorities are. For me, I always choose glass over plastic, but if one is less expensive than the other, and that's your priority, you know, you have to go with that. It's really what works best for you.
Heather, how old are your kids?
I have a high schooler, a middle schooler, and a grade schooler.
So a little of everything. Do you think this is something that you could get them excited about doing with you?
Oh, definitely. My third grader, actually, yesterday when we were walking the dogs, looked over in the river next to our house, and he said, "What is that floating in there?" And I said, "Looks like a plastic bottle." And he was really upset by that. Oh. Because they just went over a whole unit in their class on environmental awareness and taking care of your garbage and things like that. So I thought it was fantastic. So he'd definitely be on board. And
so
I know my other two are pretty conscious of that, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Lauren, do you know of any resources specifically for parents or even for teachers who might want to share some of these ideas?
They could definitely head to my website. Something that I think is always really fun for families to do together, and I do this with my friends all the time, is I'll have zero waste dinner parties. Also, I'll make a lot of the products that I make for myself with my friends or for my friends, and that really helps to get them involved. And not only are they learning a new skill, you know, making something, but they're actually making something that they're going to use, which is really powerful. Realizing, you know, brushing your teeth every day and saying, "I made this," is a really powerful thing, and it's really exciting and it's fun to do, you know, as a family or with friends, and it kind of is a great thing for bonding.
That's great. Well, Heather, I hope you'll keep us posted on how that goes. It would be great to hear about how you get your kids involved.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Heather. Let's go right back to the phone and Susie in Watertown. Hi, Susie.
Hi. How are you guys this morning?
Doing well.
Great. Well, I have what I think is a complex question because I've done a lot of reading. I've been making my own cleaning supplies and actually for softener for my laundry. I've been using vinegar with some lavender oil in it. But I found that the world of essential oils is extraordinarily confusing. The advertising is misleading. The claims are misleading. Mm. And you have to be very careful. So my question is, what grade of essential oil is good enough for things like cleaning supplies and laundry versus the things that you put on your face or on your body? And how do you find a source that has integrity?
Oh, I think that's a great question. Lauren?
I like to use all organic essential oils whenever I'm making anything, whether it's for my cleaning products to, you know, my beauty products. Because, again, when you're cleaning with essential oils, they're getting on your counters, on your hands, on your body, and so you want things that you would feel comfortable, you know, putting on your body in the products that you're using to clean. So I always focus on organic essential oils and ones that are food grade, made from really high quality ingredients. So those are my priorities when I look for essential oils.
And Lauren, are essential oils something that you can actually make yourself?
You could definitely make essential oils yourself. It's a learning process, of course, but yeah, you could definitely make them yourself.
You know, so when you've solved all the other zero waste things, you can start in on making your own essential oils.
Yep, that is next step. Phase two.
I really like under the category of kind of transitioning, you talk about making your home your sanctuary. And that just really resonated with me. And I'm guessing that it kind of strikes a chord with other people, too. What does that mean for you?
I like my home to be a representation of my values and what I love. So, you know, I love living a really minimalistic lifestyle, and I love having items in my home that are really meaningful, and I don't like just having stuff strewn everywhere. I like every single thing that is in my home to be really important to me and have some kind of strong sentimental value. And if it doesn't, then I have to figure that it's not worth being in my home. And if that's the case, you know, I'll donate it or I'll sell it on something like Craigslist. But even looking around my home right now, you know, I have a bowl that my friend brought me back from Israel filled with wood that was left over from knives that my friend makes. And everything that I have is really sentimental and is really important to me. I don't just have stuff. I have really personal sentimental items.
I have to say, one of the things for me in looking at clothing, and I find clothing hard to get rid of, because even if I only wear it, you know, once a year or every other year, someone's like, oh, but I really like that. I like the color. I like how it fits. But if I think about the fact that someone else could get good use out of it if I donate it, that makes it so much easier for me to let go.
Yep, absolutely. I totally share that sentiment. I know it can be really hard to get rid of clothing, especially because we do attach such a value to having certain articles of clothing. And I recently learned a really cool trick, and it's like a hanger trick. So there's two parts to it. There's one where you have all your hangers facing the same way, and every time you wear something, you turn the hanger around so you know you've worn it. And by the end of a season, if you haven't worn a certain item from that season, you should donate it or try to sell it. Another thing that I really like is I have a certain number of hangers, and if I want to buy something new, but secondhand new for me, then I will have to reevaluate what I have and then donate or sell something that I have to make room for something new.
Ooh, that's pretty brutal.
It is, but it really helps, because it helps me evaluate what I'm using and if I'm actually using it. You know, and I live in New York City, where space is a rare commodity.
Yes.
And so every little inch counts. So I like to just constantly reevaluate what I have and what I'm using.
No, I think that's a really good point. I am married to a Parisian, and Parisian apartments and New York apartments have a lot in common. And literally, it's the idea of you don't bring something in unless something else is going out.
Absolutely. I used to live in Paris and can touch both of my walls with both of my hands. And so I understand how important it is to live minimalistically. And I really don't feel like I'm lacking ever.
Right. And I think that's the important part. If you feel like you're being deprived, it's probably not going to last.
Exactly. And I haven't felt that way once, which is just a testament to how great this lifestyle makes me feel.
Dawn in New Berlin says she has a son who does truck driving 3 days a week, and he brings all of his garbage home in a bag so he can recycle at home. And she says after listening in, she's going to tell her son about the alternatives discussed today to create even less waste.
That's amazing. I would even suggest, you know, trying to pack your own lunches. When I was working a 9-to-5 office job before I started my company, I could have purchased lunch every day and create a lot of waste, but instead I used stainless steel watertight containers to bring my lunch every day. Not only was I saving money, I was eating so much healthier and eating foods that I really love because I made them myself.
And on Facebook, Cheryl in Lancaster says, I have all the ingredients that Lauren mentioned for making the toothpaste and wonders if you'd be willing to share your recipe on the air or on the Facebook page. And actually, I did post before the show, there is a video that you have on your YouTube channel, Trash is for Tossers Zero Waste Toothpaste. So that is up on the Facebook page, or people can go to trashisfortossers.com and find it there, or Google Trash is for Tossers on YouTube.
Exactly. And that's actually one of my favorite parts about living this lifestyle is a lot of the things that you need to clean your home or even, you know, use in your beauty or personal care products, you probably already have them. Mm-hmm. And I love that, you know, some of the ingredients that I use in my deodorant are the same ingredients that I use to clean. I mean, how cool is that? And I could also use them to bake bread if I wanted to. So it's really versatile. You don't need much.
And let's see, caller Wanda wondered if you knew, Lauren, of any initiatives that exist now to encourage the general public to also live this kind of zero waste lifestyle. Are there any kind of large scale products around the country that you know of?
Large scale products?
Projects.
Not that I know of, actually. That is a really great question. I will look into that and try to post some things on my Facebook page, Trashless for Tossers, if I find any.
Great. And let's see, Jennifer in Pleasant Prairie asks whether you're familiar with Norwex cleaning cloths. Do you have an opinion on them? Jennifer says, I can't believe how much we've reduced waste and household chemicals since switching to the reusable washable cloths.
I have never heard of that brand, but I, too, used reusable, washable washcloths. They all kind of start out as face washcloths, and then when they get covered with, you know, dirt or time kind of breaks them down or makeup, whatever it is, I transition them to my cleaning cloth that I'll use to clean my floors and my counters and my mirrors and my windows. So I'll repurpose those, and then once I'm done with them, I will actually bring them to textile recycling, or since I buy 100% cotton cloth, they're actually compostable as well.
We actually did a program just about a week or so ago about a pilot project in Wisconsin near Green Bay for textile recycling, and so that was really exciting to find out that there's movement on that front in the state. Let's go back to the phones and Mickey in Madison. Hi, Mickey.
Hi. So I actually graduated with Lauren from the Environmental Studies program at NYU. Hi, Lauren. It's Nikki. I did the ComEg.
Hi!
So I live in Madison now. Anyways, it's been really incredible watching you, you know, gain success, and you've done incredible things offering, you know, suggestions for people how they can make individual changes in their life. But, you know, for lasting change to happen, we really need to see industry transition to creating less waste. So I was wondering if you have any next steps to plan to scale up.
That's a great question, Mickey. Lauren?
Yeah. Hi, Mickey. So great to see or hear from you. That just made me really happy. And yeah, I mean, I started my company as a way to kind of make it more convenient for people to use these products that I'm using in my everyday life. I also think it's really important for companies to take responsibility for what they're putting into the waste stream. So something that I don't see happening, which I hope will happen more in the future, is that businesses are held responsible for the materials that they're putting out there. So, you know, it's a difficult concept, but, you know, if you're a food company and you're putting out your product and packaging that it isn't recyclable, you're putting that burden kind of on the consumer and on the city, and taxpayers have to pay a lot of money for that to be properly disposed of. My goal would be to have some of that burden be placed back on the businesses that are manufacturing this difficult to recycle product themselves.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. There was a question on Facebook that I think we touched on, but I really think it's an important point. Holly says, I wonder if it's limited to income being able to live a zero waste lifestyle, in that those with more buying power can choose alternative options. But Lauren, it sounds like it's actually a more economical lifestyle too.
It's definitely more economical. I have saved so much money by living this lifestyle. My food costs are lower. My product costs are exponentially lower. My clothing costs are lower because I'm buying all secondhand clothing. My furniture costs are lower because I'm buying, again, secondhand furniture. Really, by living this lifestyle, you know, besides having an amazing positive impact to the environment, it also has a great impact on your wallet, and you will find that you save a lot of money.
Of course, one thing that comes with having more economic means is often having more leisure time. I'm guessing when you started, probably there was more of an investment of time in, like you said, researching how to make these different things and figuring out places where you can buy these reusable and sustainable things. Is there a big time commitment on the front end, and then does it just kind of fall into a regular habit?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you change your habits, there's going to be a little bit of a time investment, but I try to help alleviate that by putting a lot of the recipes that have worked well for me and my tips and tricks on my blog so people don't have to go through the same research process that I went through. There's also a lot of great resources out there that have popped up. Bea Johnson, the woman that I talked about that inspired me, actually created an incredible app called the Bulk Locator app, and you could actually put in your zip code and find places in your neighborhood or in your area that sell food and products in bulk. And I think it's an incredible resource and really helps make living zero waste or low waste a lot easier.
You say on your blog that the path to zero waste is never ending. That might sound discouraging to some people, but I'm betting that you, Lauren, actually see that kind of as an opportunity.
Absolutely. I mean, there's always room to improve. There's always something that all of us can be doing better. And I think one of the best things about transitioning to this lifestyle has been realizing that, you know, never accepting the way things are, the way I am, and knowing that I could always strive to be better and always strive to do more. And it's really empowering, and it really helps you stay sharp and constantly learning. And it's been really amazing for me.
Well, I'm guessing, too, that hopefully there are new developments that you can take advantage of. So maybe it's new products, maybe it's items that are coming with less packaging that then are more in keeping with your lifestyle, or things like you were saying, you know, like textile recycling. Hopefully part of the opportunity and the path being never ending is that there are just better ways to do it coming out.
Absolutely. I see a lot more in Europe, but, you know, hopefully soon in the United States, that there are a lot of zero waste grocery stores popping up, which is incredible. I mean, places that make it more convenient to buy products in bulk, that's amazing. That'll definitely help lower our overall waste. And I anticipate that if, you know, shopping in bulk or package-free becomes more and more popular, already existing companies will move towards, you know, changing their processes to align more with that type of shopping. So I'm sure there are good things to come.
So Lauren, we're just about at the end of our time together, but let's send people off with, I'm sure you've inspired a lot of people today. If they want to get a start today, what's the best first step for them to do?
Best first step, I always say, is just evaluate your trash, see what's in there, and try to figure out how to reduce it. Second step is the, you know, everyday one-time changes that make a big impact. So like I said before, using a reusable bag instead of a paper or plastic bag, using a reusable water bottle instead of a plastic water bottle, you know, saying no to straws in your cocktails at bars, little things, and realizing that you're powerful and you have the ability to do that and not accept the way things are. And the third thing that I would suggest is actually the DIY, so learning how to make products yourself. And I am posting a lot of my recipes on my blog, Trashes for Tossers, and I started a YouTube channel where I'll have videos of how to make all of the products that I'm making. So the first one on there is toothpaste, and then the next one is a whipped body butter. That's like my favorite thing ever right now.
Well, Lauren Singer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Lauren Singer majored in environmental studies at New York University and then decided to live her values by living a zero-waste lifestyle. She blogs about her experience at trashisfortossers.com. Lots of great information there and a lot of inspiration. I think also spring is a good time to think about getting rid of a lot of that excess stuff. Well, coming up next, we are going to talk about another environmental topic that's on a lot of people's minds, the fact that our pollinators are in trouble. We're going to talk with two entomologists from UW-Madison who are tracking bumblebees to know what they need so we can support them. That's coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.